Now on BBC Radio 4, jazz pianist Jamie Cullum sets off on his piano pilgrimage.
Hi, I'm Jamie Cullum. Over the next three Saturday mornings here on BBC Radio 4, I'm going to be taking your pilgrimage in the UK at what place the piano has in modern British life. Now, pianos are everywhere in my life. My earliest memory is sitting underneath that bright piano we had in our house while my brother played some simple Bach piece. Every day I play some sort of piano on stage, at home, or in the studio. Once, they were at the centre of everybody's life. In this first programme, I'm going to be discovering how a small part of London was once at the centre of the world's piano industry.
If you visited here, say, 100 years ago, or just before the First War, something like that, and you'd wander around the streets, you would have seen young lads pushing barrows of piano parts.
I'll learn how to tune a piano at the last piano tuning course in the country.
Tuning is not a musical thing. It's physics, really, at the end of the day. We listen to the beats, we need to recognise the beats, and then adjust them accordingly.
And I'll get to play a very special piano that's been brought back to life in the Yorkshire Dales.
I'd say I like this, actually.
But my pilgrimage starts in the offices of my production company in London. About 2 or 3 months ago, we found a piano outside on the pavement. I guess it's a more common sight these days. Someone obviously didn't know what to do with this large, heavy instrument, so they left it out on the road, and we brought it inside here. We huffed and puffed it up the stairs and put it in the reception here. We opened it up, and it was revealed to be a B. Squire and Sons piano. This is something, a make of pianos I know nothing about. And indeed, kind of finding this piano and bringing it up here was part of the inspiration for doing this documentary in the first place. So I called upon someone who really does know his pianos. His name is Alistair Lawrence. He is a piano maker, John Broadwood and Sons. He's a piano historian, and he really does know his pianos, and he's here with me now. How are you doing, Alistair? Thanks for coming.
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, yes.
So what do you think of our poor, abandoned, orphaned piano?
Well, it's quite an elegant piece of furniture, actually, as pianos go. It looks definitely from the early 1920s. But the thing that struck me is, very unusually, it has a casework of solid oak. So the first thing that I thought was, this must be a school instrument. And that was confirmed when I opened the lid of the piano to find that the keys, which are usually at this date of ivory, are actually of celluloid, and they're designed in a way that you can't pick off the key facing.
This is built for punishment.
Built for punishment.
God, it sounds like the kind of piano I should
play. It would even do as a pub piano.
Right.
For that same reason.
Right.
We know it's a quality piano for one reason, and that is, this sounds like the Antiques Roadshow. We know it's a quality piano because the name is actually let in brass.
It's actually a very loud piano without the damper down. I mean, that is really a very loud piano, but when you put the damper down. Tell me about the actual company itself, B. Squire and Sons.
Well, the Squire family were what you might call a big family of piano makers. This particular one, B. Squire, the B actually stands for Betsy. It's the mother, who was for many, many years a widow, and she ran the firm. And because women were not supposed to be piano makers at this day, she hid the fact. I mean, this should be a Betsy Squire and Son.
Wow.
She was succeeded by her son, Frank, and he died at the age of 87, still building pianos in Stanhope Street, Camden Town.
So this piano was actually built 2 miles away in Camden from where it was dumped. What was so special about Camden?
Well, Camden, when this piano was being made for a number of years before, was the world centre of piano making.
Wow.
It was an amazing accumulation of skill, knowledge, enterprise.
Camden Town.
Camden Town. There were over 100 piano factories in North London in the early 20th century. It's incredible.
I'd love to see some of these sites where this piano making happened. Could we go to Camden and you could show me some places?
It all happens in Camden.
Great, well, let's go. Alistair, we're right in the centre of Camden here. It's a busy day, as usual, as it normally is here in Camden. We're outside a pub called The World's End. This is actually a pub I've been to many times before. Why have you taken me here?
Well, this pub is now The World's End. In fact, it used to be the world centre of the piano industry, previously known as the Mother Red Cap. That was the pub's name. And it was the labour exchange for the piano industry. So, for example, the bosses in all the local factories in the surrounding streets would come here, and the workforce, people looking for jobs, piano makers would sit in the bar, and the piano boss would walk in and say, I want three French polishers this week, and he'd hire three on the spot in the pub.
This is a job centre for the piano industry.
It was a job centre.
That happened to have a bar in it.
It happened to have a bar, which is quite useful.
It makes a lot of sense. At that time in Britain, the piano industry, was it really thriving at that point? Was that at its most busy, or was the busiest part of its industry still to come?
Well, that period, 1870 and 1914, was really the high spot. There were more pianos being made than ever before. For a world market, Camden Town was building and shipping out pianos, mainly by train, actually, from Camden Goods Station, down to the docks, to all the colonies in the Empire.
So when did they actually start building pianos in the UK?
In England, it began in the 1760s, in Soho. But what happened is they outgrew Soho. There wasn't enough room for the workshops. So ultimately, by the 1870s and 80s, the bigger factories established new factories on a greenfield site here in Camden Town.
It's funny, I've always associated Camden with music anyway, and had never really unwittingly appreciated the level of which I'm kind of drawn to it. It's obviously something to do with the piano industry as well, spiritually kind of drawn to it in lots of ways. So, Alistair, we're outside Heckscher's now. This is the suppliers to the piano trade since 1883.
Hello,
it's Jamie and Alistair from Radio 4 here. With allowed access. So, Martin, hi, how are you doing? Martin Heckscher, you're the gentleman to which this building gains its name, is that correct?
Well, one of my ancestors, anyway.
And right here in Camden, where the centre of the piano industry was.
That's why we're here. At the back end of the warehouse, we have a map which shows the location of something over 100 piano factories. It's a sort of flimsy old thing, but there's a little red mark in the bottom left-hand corner, which marks where we're standing now, just on Baham Street, running parallel to Camden High Street. And at the bottom of the map, there's a whole list of different names of different factories, and they're all annotated with different numbers on the map showing the location of the original factories.
So on this map, are there any of these piano factories still remaining?
Sadly, they've all gone.
Right.
If you'd visited here, say, 100 years ago, or just before the First War, something like that, and you'd wandered around the streets, you would have seen young lads pushing barrows of piano parts. That means case parts, actions, keyboards, strung backs and so forth. It would have been an amazing sight.
We've seen the map now, Alistair, so let's go and have a look around Camden.
Yeah, shall we go and see the spectacular Collard factory? It's
right.
Worth a visit.
So, Alistair, we're walking up Oval Road and we've just arrived at this beautiful circular building that I've never noticed here. It's 4243 Gloucester Crescent, and this was the purpose-built factory for Colin Collard.
That's right. Yeah. As we're standing here now, going into the building, looking inside, you can see what a wonderful area it was for actually building pianos. Fantastic light, surrounded by light, plenty of space. Centrally, it's gone now, but in the middle, there was a goods lift for moving the pianos up and down the various floors. The pianos began on the floor below us, where they made the soundboards, fitted the frames, and to string them, they took them into this building here, because the stringing was so noisy, it drove everybody crazy. So they brought them back, and then they hoisted them right up to the top, and in the top story, where we're going, they put the casework on. They glued the veneered case parts on.
Alistair, so we're on the top floor now of this building. It's really beautiful up here. The roof is particularly amazing. And there is, well, a rectangular Collard and Collard piano, which I assume was made in this building?
Almost certainly it would have been. It's in rosewood. It has a rosewood case which has been faded in over many years of sunshine. It was a status symbol when this was made, very much.
It does not look like it's been played at all. I'm going to have a look. It doesn't even have a pedal, so let's have a look. It's completely... It's not even in tune with itself. It's in tune with Pluto, I reckon. Sounds like my next album. So when did the piano industry here in Camden start to decline?
Slowly in the 1920s. The first thing that came in the early 20s was a gramophone. So people went out and bought gramophone records rather than learnt to play the piano in the front room. Then, of course, you've got films coming in, silent movies and then talkies. And then you've got the car. People, the available purchasing money that people had to spare would be spent on the car. But there was a big problem in the 1920s, and that was two little things, or two major things. A lot of the skilled workforce had been killed in the First War. They lost hundreds of piano makers in the trenches in the First War. So there was a huge skill shortage. In addition to that, as a result of the war, raw materials were very expensive to find, particularly steel and iron.
How do you feel about the industry these days?
The good news today is that many young people are learning to play keyboards. And what we're finding in particular, when I say we, I mean the piano industry, is that when children or teenagers get to a certain age, they want to move on to the real piano.
Well, there's hope for the future then, Alistair. Yeah. Thanks so much for starting me off on my journey.
Thank you. Have a good trip.
Around 4,000 acoustic pianos are still sold in Britain each year. Obviously, that's nowhere near the number that was sold at the height of the piano-making industry at the turn of the last century, but there are still a lot of thriving businesses selling pianos in the UK. Just a short walk away from Camden is Markson's Pianos, a shop I know well and one that is certainly keeping busy. I popped in to meet Simon Markson, one of the grandsons of Lewis Markson, who originally set up the business in his front room in southeast London a century ago. So this is a Winkelmann piano. So what year would this have been made, do you think?
That will be 1930s. You can see it by the three panels at the front.
And this is £2,500, if I can describe it. It's a very beautiful upright. It's a tall upright with some lovely kind of wood detailing on it. And yeah, it's a really nice piano. So could you show me a classic, maybe a popular starter new piano that, say, if someone walked in and said, I've got a small budget but I want to buy a brand new real upright piano, what would you likely steer them towards here in this room?
You've got a Yamaha B1, for example, and it has a laminated soundboard. It's a sort of industrially very strong. Or you can have a variety of pianos made in China.
Right.
With different names. One we have with our name on it, but they're all, the quality really has gone up.
There's a Steinreber piano, a new piano, but it's supposedly a lovely piano, which I'm going to try out. I guess from a piano player's point of view, I guess the upright over there that's £500 versus the Steinreber over here, which is £40,000, huge difference in terms of money. The way it feels under your fingers, you've just got a lot more options in terms of touch, the way you push the keys, not just in volume, but you can change the tone, the way you play the notes a lot easier on a piano like this. The dynamic range is times 20,000, I guess, is the best way I can describe it. In the Yorkshire Dales, I found one of the last places in the country where pianos are still being made. Cavendish Pianos opened around a year ago in the old converted forge they use as their workshop and showroom. So we're kind of in the inner sanctum of Cavendish Pianos where they string the instruments here. So I guess this is the soundboard and the frame where the strings go on, but it's lying flat here on a frame. And this is in the process of being strung with huge amounts of tension by Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hiya.
Is this a very tiny, fiddly job, or does it take a lot of engineering skill? Can you tell me a bit about it?
It can be. It's a reasonably simple process to learn, but it takes a long time to master. As you can see, all these strings are very finely graduated as they go down the bass, and that has to be handmade. They have to be hand-wound. There's not a machine that can do that for us. Okay, so the bass strings are on the piano now, and what I'm doing is bringing them up to pitch without necessarily tuning them. And once that's been done, they will be chipped and then tuned several times until they start to remain stable.
It's amazing to see a piano like this. It's someone who kind of looks inside a piano so often, but never in pieces like this. It's really amazing, actually, and kind of beautiful as well. All the tools laid out here, and the strings and everything, and just the way it looks inside laid out like this. It's just great. I've come to Newark College to visit John Lord. He's the course leader of the last piano tuning course in the UK. It's a lovely college here. I'm currently in what basically looks like a classroom, I guess, but we're surrounded by pianos and kind of tuning pins and forks and all the kind of things you'd associate with piano tuning. And I'm sitting here with John. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us here. So what sort of backgrounds do these students come from? Do you see a kind of pattern, or are they from all walks of life?
We get the most interesting peer groups, I think, of any course going in Britain. It's quite remarkable. We get the full age range right the way through from 16-year-old school leavers right the way through to people in their 50s, 60s. And my oldest ever student was a guy who came to us who was 71. To be fair, he was doing it, you know, just for interest and fun rather than a new career.
Do you think there'll always be pianos, there'll always be a need for piano tuners and piano restorers? Or do you think it's getting more and more niche?
It's possibly becoming more and more niche, but, you know, people say to me, is there any work? And my stock reply is, there is always lots of work for a good technician. Obviously, yes, the trade has contracted, but the piano tuning side and repair side, interestingly, at this moment in time, absolutely right now, you know, I'm busier than ever. Okay, so this is a fairly typical room that we've got here with a couple of pianos, upright pianos in, and a grand. One of the uprights is being tuned by one of our third year students as we speak, as you can probably hear. So, right, Mark, let's have a look at what you've got then. So, so you're moving the pitch up to 5 to 8,
yeah,
on this one, okay. So, check the pitch. Okay, good. Yep, good, you just nice. Off the fork,
yeah.
It's just on the underside, but yeah, pretty good on the pitch. And certainly within the realms of being able to do a fine tune on top,
yeah,
of, which is what you would do in a pitch and fine.
So, John, I saw you were hitting your knee with a tuning fork. Do you have a special kneecap? That does it not hurt your knee over the years?
Tuner's knee.
Yeah.
It's a very bruised kneecap, but years of practice. Yeah.
So are you, when you're discussing the tuning of this note, and you said, you know, this one's slightly under, are you using your taste and your objectivity, or are you using some different...
No, we're actually listening to a physical phenomenon known as beats, which are created when two frequencies are very slightly out of tune. It sets up like a wowing sound, is the practical upshot. And the whole of piano tuning is not a musical thing. It's physics, really, at the end of the day, because we need to... we listen to the beats, we need to recognise the beats, and then adjust them accordingly. The problem we have is that the whole of Western music is built upon a compromise known as equal temperament, which was sort of first brought to the fore as a tuning system by Bach, and since then we've sort of come to recognise it as being the basis of all Western music. We've just sort of got used to it over the last couple of hundred years. But as piano tuners, what we've got to do is we've got to divide the 12 chromatic notes of the octave into equal semitones. And actually what that does, and what on Mark's tuning here, it means that we actually have to tune the fourths and particularly very slightly out of tune. We have to narrow the fifths very fractionally and expand the fourths very fractionally, rather than tuning them what we refer to as dead, i.e. beatless. And we have to do that to make the tuning fit so that we can play in every key and they all sound acceptable.
Do you think some people can never understand that?
The answer is yes.
Right, so yeah, there are literally some ears that cannot hear that level of detail that you're talking about.
It's actually like teaching any subject. You know, if we were teaching biology or geography, you get some in a group who are flyers, you know, who just seem to be natural for it. You get some who sort of graft away and can do it with time. And inevitably, we do get one or two who struggle. I'm going through the scale. Just a little bit quick on that A to D. It's just jumping out there. Yeah. The... You can hear that. It's just a little bit quicker than it should be. Falls at, you know, round terms of beat per second. Yeah, so just a fraction. Yep, good.
I've walked into Claire's session. She's in here tuning piano. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
She's got her tools out and stuff. She does not look like what you expect a piano tuner to look like. She's packing some pretty cool roller skates here. So it's...
It's a safe haven for freaks and weirdos in the best sense, I think.
Did you understand the concept of what you were listening for quite quickly, or was that a real surprise when they started talking about beats and this wowing sound that you have to listen for?
It was a real surprise. And I was surprised that, having played for years, I had never... noticed. I mean, you know when a piano sounds grisly, but you don't quite know why. So it was really tough because there's so much going on in a note. So now I've kind of lost the concept of what normal people almost can hear.
Well, I'm here now in the Bronte Parsonage Museum in Haworth, West Yorkshire. This was actually the Bronte family home and the place where the sisters Charlotte, Emily and Anne wrote their famous novels. Now, the reason I've come here is because right in front of me is an incredible old piano. It's very tall, about, I guess, double the height of a normal upright piano. It's got 58 keys. It's incredibly ornate, really one of the most extraordinary pianos I've ever had the opportunity to stand in front of. And sitting beside me is the man who restored this piano belonging to the Brontes to its former glory, Ken Forrest. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Dean.
Well, I mean, what sort of piano is it? As I said, I've never seen anything like it. Who's it made by and when was it made?
Well, it's a cabinet upright. Uprights began by putting grand pianos on the keyboard end and standing them on a table. That was the upright grand. Then somebody had the brilliant idea of lowering it to the floor, turning it upside down, and so that the tuning pins are at the top now, you can see. And they invented these very, very tall sticker actions so that you could actually access the strike point with the hammers. And so if you could take all the action and the bottom doors away, you would see the shape of a grand piano, but mirror image.
So how much did you have to do to restore it to, I mean, the working order that it's in now?
Every single part had to be dismantled and restored and then rebuilt again. As far as I could, I kept all the original hinges and parts. There were one or two parts missing. But by and large, it's still completely original. Obviously, all the strings had gone. The bass strings had totally gone. There was nothing left at all of the brass wire. There were just little coils wrapped round the tuning pins, and I was able to prise them off and measure them up to get the diameters, and so I was able to make the scale up again. But no, it was, as I say, derindustriously. It would have been skipped a long time ago.
But what kind of music would the Bronte sisters have played on this piano?
As far as I'm aware, they weren't absolutely up-to-the-minute avant-garde music consumers. They loved Handel, and I think there's quite a bit of Handel in the collection. There's Beethoven waltz, more than Mozartic. Not really a great deal of the romantic music there, which is odd for authors who became known as, you know, some of the vanguard of the romantic movement.
Have many people played this piano since you've restored it?
No.
No, right.
No, very few.
Right.
It's so delicate. It's the sort of gentle playing that maybe Mozart or Clementi would have done. As soon as you start the romantic stuff and you want to get a bit more out of it, you'd start breaking.
I should say I'm probably the kind of pianist you've just described. I'm literally the least likely candidate to be allowed to play on this piano, but I promise I'll be very gentle. Would I be allowed to have a little play?
I do hope you will.
Well, thank you so much. Sadly, I can't play any of those, any of the music you've described, but I'd love to just improvise something gently on it. So.
Certainly.
Thank you. Okay, well, I'll do that now, right? As I lay my hands on this, it's got a very shallow action when you press down the keys, but if you just grace the notes gently, it's got such an incredible, pure tone and amazing clarity to the notes, particularly down here. You can really hear the strings, but it's got a lovely feel to it, a real lovely sound. I can say I've never played a piano like this, actually. In the second part of my piano pilgrimage next Saturday morning, I'll be visiting a school in Northern Ireland where the piano is still a central part of pupils' lives. And we'll be putting our abandoned piano back in its rightful place in a London pub with Chaz and Dave. It's a real privilege to play that.